And good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Laurent Landis. The late Patty Fink is busy organizing protests at City Council, rabble-rousing, doing what she does best. We have several guests with us today. One's on the phone with us right now. His name is Zach McGinnis. Zach, are you there? Hi.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me? Sorry, I'm actually out of it now. It's crazy.
Okay, you're breaking up a little bit, let me just fiddle with...
I'm walking outside right now.
Oh, okay. That's a little bit better, yeah. Okay.
All right.
Tell us, you are organizing the Dallas Comic and Pop Expo that's going to be in Richardson next week, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, tell us a little bit about the event. What? How did you even get involved with it or create it?
Well, I've actually been booking celebrities for autograph appearances going on 7 years now, and I had over 50 conventions I did last year, and I decided it's time to have one of my own. So my, you know, a couple promoters I work with, and I decided to throw it together.
So tell us about one of the guests who's going to be there, who's going to be on with us next.
David Yost, he's actually the original Blue Mighty Morphin Power Ranger. He is a member of our community and a huge LGBT activist. And, I've actually been working with him for a couple of years now, and he's really looking forward to coming out to Dallas.
Great. Tell us a little bit about Comic and Pop Expos. They're popular in the gay and lesbian community. Why are they so popular?
Well, conventions are a place where people of all walks of life can come, and they're not judged. I mean, in general, a lot of these people are people, I mean, like me. I mean, I was kind of nerdy and got picked on and whatnot growing up, but, I mean, black, white, tall, skinny, gay, straight, everyone are fans of comics or toys or sci-fi or something. And everyone just comes together and no one picks on anybody. Everyone gets along. It's just a place of unity.
And my co-host, Laurent, who I like to pick on a lot.
But you know what? Also, I find that comic book conventions are popular because you can. There's a lot of people that go there and dress up. Who loves to dress up more than gays?
No one.
And who does it better?
And who does it better?
It's really the thing.
The gays. Right. The gays.
So, and we'll ask this to David. I was going to say, so who better to be a Power Ranger than a gay Power Ranger? But we'll get to that with David. Tell us a little bit about what's going to be there, first of all.
Well, actually, so Friday night, the 28th, we're kicking off the weekend with karaoke with Nicholas Brendon, who played Xander on Buffy the Vampire series, and there's going to be a couple other actors from Buffy there as well, which is always a lot of fun. You can look up videos from past karaoke nights with Nick on YouTube. Saturday and Sunday, I mean, it's just going to be full of, panels with the celebrity guests. There's going to be drawing classes with some of the artists, costume contests. Saturday evening, we're doing a live art auction with all of our attending artists, and it's going to be benefiting the Peter Mayhew Foundation, who played Chewbacca, and also the Wounded Warrior Project. We're probably going to be posting our schedule tomorrow, so I don't want to say exactly what's on Saturday or Sunday just yet, because we're just putting the finishing touches on that.
And then one of the other events is a speed dating event, which we're going to talk about with Ryan Glitch later in the hour. And
yes.
But it's going to be partially a gay and lesbian speed dating event.
Yes, it is. Ryan Glitch, he does sci-fi speed dating. There was an outcry from the LGBT community because there's tons of us at conventions, and they wanted to do it. So he's putting it together for our show.
And it'll be interesting to see how he doesn't mix up the gay and the straight part of it. But I guess it's good-looking people on that side.
I don't know about you, but I'd be okay if he mixed it. But hey, actually, David Yost just stepped outside. Let me pass the phone over to him.
Oh, okay, great.
Okay, just 1 second.
Sure, and that was Zach McGinnis. He is from Dallas, and he's gay, putting together this gay and lesbian expo, a comic and pop expo next week. David Yost is coming to the phone.
I'm on the line.
Hi, David. How are you?
Hello.
I'm good. How are you?
Good. This is Dave Taffet, and I'm here with Laurent Landis. David was the Blue Power Ranger, right?
Correct. Yes. Good job.
Tell us how you even got that job. I know you were you did a lot of acrobatics.
Well, yeah. I was a competitive gymnast for a number of years of my young life, and so that obviously helped me get the role in Power Rangers. I just moved to LA to be an actor like a lot of people, and I saw an open call and I went to it, and I was one of the lucky original five.
And the only one who appeared in every episode.
In the beginning I was one of the longest running actors in the show, and but then Jason David Frank, who became the who was the Green and White Ranger, he ended up now being the longest running actor in the show. But yeah, I held the title for a while.
Yeah. One of the things that came out when you came out, you said that you had been bullied on the set.
This is true, yeah.
Tell us about that. Why would anybody even do that? And when I say why, any kind of bullying just goes over my head.
Well, when we talk about bullying, let's be clear that we're not talking about people pushing me around or beating me up or anything like that. We're just talking about, it was the early 90s, and people, gay people were not accepted the way that we maybe are today. We still have a long ways to go, but people would say things and, sort of make fun of me, and some of the people that were doing it were high-level people, and it just made my working environment not very exciting at times.
Were you already out to your fellow castmates, or...?
No, I was very confused about where I was with my sexuality at that time, so
they were kind of assuming.
Yeah, a lot of people assumed.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just one of those things where, as an actor, it's really difficult to be out and be gay because you'll at that time you definitely would have lost a lot of work. And so it's something that you want to try to keep under wraps. At least I did at that time, and I was struggling with who I was. But, there was people that would say things and kind of spread rumors, and it was just a little frustrating.
You say that it was high-level people, though. You would think that somebody who has a financial interest in a show, or and anybody has a financial interest in a show who works on a show because they want it to be renewed, you would think they would do everything they could, especially to make the person who's on air comfortable, because without that, it's hard to put in a good performance.
One would think.
Maybe I'm just talking logically, but it seems to me when you make it uncomfortable for somebody who's on the air, it's really hard to perform.
Yeah, but you got to understand, just in general, our working conditions were if you're not happy, we will replace you. So that was given to everybody straight across the board as an actor. So, they weren't really necessarily out to make us comfortable. We were disposable to them.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like? I don't know, or were you even out to your... I knew you weren't out to your castmates, but were you out to your agent? Because we always hear this, Hollywood rumors from actors that, who come out, and then they'll say that their agent or their management told them it wouldn't be a good idea to come out.
Yeah, I wasn't out to my agents at all. I did. One of my agents was gay, but I was not out to them. To me, it was my business, and I didn't feel like anybody needed to know. The less people that knew, I thought, would be better, so I could just protect myself. And I just really wanted to focus on my career, and I just wanted to go to work and do my job and get as far as I could as an actor.
One other thing that I read about you was that you decided to go into conversion therapy.
This is true as well, yeah.
Ooh. How did you get talked into that?
I didn't get talked into it. That was something I willingly chose to do myself.
Huh.
I have a religious background, and for me, I just, I really didn't want to be gay. Mm-hmm. At the time that I was in Hollywood in my early 20s, I just thought if there's a chance for me to be straight, I want to take that chance. But, I was naive and foolish, and I did a lot of damage to myself mentally by trying conversion therapy. And it ended up having me have a nervous breakdown, and I checked into the hospital for weeks and, really had to start accepting the truth of who I was and accepting the truth that I'm a gay man, and there's honestly nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. And it must have taken you a few years to come to that from the time you started your conversion therapy.
To come to the conclusion that it's okay to be gay?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in conversion therapy for 2 years, and then I had a nervous breakdown, and it took a good It took another good year. I moved to Mexico after I had my nervous breakdown. I moved to Mexico to try to get my head together. And then I came back. And then, you know, it still took several years after that for me to really be comfortable with who I am.
Huh. So once you did all that, you came back, you're healthy, you're happy. How did your career go?
Well, I didn't jump right back into acting. Okay. I started working behind the scenes. So I became a producer and have worked on several reality shows. And I'm also a location manager. And in location work, I work on several scripted comedies. So, you know, I act every now and then, but I haven't journeyed all the way back to being an actor yet.
Is that where you prefer to be, behind the scenes now, or did you want to be out in front?
No, I mean, both are fine to me. I enjoy being an actor. I love acting. It was my first love. So, obviously, that would be my preference.
Mm-hmm. Huh. And that's great. I'm glad that you were able to work that through, because I know people who don't work it through till maybe they're in their 50s and, you know, have led miserable lives because of it and made a whole lot of people around them miserable.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, but we all have our own journey.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's just not a cut and dry thing. I wish it was, so that we could just all be happy.
Yeah.
But some of us have to go through what we have to go through to get to accept ourselves.
You know, the Power Rangers show was so incredibly popular to a generation. Absolutely, you have some gay child fans, whether they knew they were gay or not at the time.
One of the people here in the studio is raising his hand. I was.
Have you heard, but since you've come out publicly, have you heard from any of those kids who are now adults or maybe even teenagers and say, you know, thank you for what you've done?
Yeah, on a daily basis. It's actually quite overwhelming. A lot of people write to me on my Facebook page or send stuff to me on Twitter, or when they come to the convention, they just thank me for coming out and doing all that I'm doing for the LGBTQI community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hear so many stories where, you know, like me coming out has helped them come out to their family or their friends and accept who they are. So I'm obviously honored.
That's
that
great.
I, as a person, could have that kind of an impact.
See, Pat Robertson had it wrong. Well, not Pat Robertson. They were like saying,
Pat Robertson definitely has it wrong.
Well, he does, but they were saying that back in the 90s that the Teletubbies were gay, when in fact it was one of the Power Rangers.
That was Jerry Falwell.
That probably would have made Pat Robertson's head spin around several times.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it was Jerry Falwell. That's what it was. Yeah.
Jerry Falwell, too, yeah?
Yep.
Oh, definitely. So when you come to one of these events, do you do these often?
Lately, since we've come up on the 20-year anniversary of Power Rangers, I've been doing a lot more. So it seems like I'm almost somewhere every weekend doing a different Comic-Con.
20-year anniversary.
Yeah, it's been a
while. Yeah, crazy.
Huh. God, that's making me feel old. But what do you do at these events?
Well, it's going to sound really cheesy, but I mean, I sign autographs for people and I take pictures with people. So, and you know, we usually will do some kind of a question and answer panel where people can come and ask us questions about our time on Power Rangers. But that's really all it comes down to.
So what are the main questions they ask you?
What was it like being a Power Ranger? What was your favorite episode? Oh. What's your favorite monster? What was it like to be the geek? I don't know. That's the basic four or five that I get all the time.
Okay, so Laurent just started smiling, and so did Tyler here in the studio when we said, who's your favorite geek? So who's your favorite geek?
Well,
not your favorite geek. What was
favorite
it like
monster.
Being a geek?
Favorite monster.
Oh, favorite monster. Okay.
My favorite monster. Well, when we went and filmed the movie in Australia, we had Ivan Ooze, and I just always thought he was the coolest.
Why?
Why?
Yeah, what did he do that you liked about him?
Just because he was purple, and he was really evil, and just the way that his character was. He was funny and, I don't know, just funny and mean at the same time. I just enjoyed working with Ivan Ooze.
And the gay Teletubby was the purple one. So
yeah, exactly. Purple has a theme.
Now, I know you said you're kind of bullied on a set, but was it necessarily by your fellow castmates? And if not, do you keep in touch with any of them? Or have you kept
in touch? I'm in touch with, I would say, almost all of my castmates. We're
cool.
Still very close and good friends. So I'm really clear. Things get twisted in the writing and things, especially by TMZ and stuff like that. But if you actually type in David Yost interview number 3, which is I did an interview for No Pink Spandex, you'll actually see the actual words that I use and the actual people that I call out on their behavior.
Good.
And going back to my character, what I think is ironic is that at one point my character had a unicorn as what we call a Zord. So I just thought it was sort of funny that I, as a gay person, got stuck with the unicorn.
David, can you stick with us just a few minutes?
Sure, I'll do that.
Okay, we need to take a quick break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis, and we'll be back with more right after this.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now it is time to make your pledge count. Be sure to send it to KNON 5353 Maple Avenue, Dallas, Texas 75235. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by donating online at knon.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. KNON 5353 Maple Avenue, Dallas, Texas 75235. Be sure to include the name of the show you are supporting. For questions about the pledge drive, 214-828-9500, extension 234.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And this is 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with Laron Landis. Patty will be back with us next week. We're talking to David Yost. He is the Blue Power Ranger. And, David, okay, I don't know. Did we get the answer to about being a geek? We didn't get an answer about it. Okay, what was great about playing a geek?
Well, it was obviously a challenge for me because in real life I'm not smart. At all. So that was fun. But just, he was a science guy. He was a technical guy. So he was always making inventions to help the Power Ranger team. And he was somebody that always thought his way out of trouble before just jumping into fighting. So it was really cool to play a character that used his brain before he used his brawn.
That's unlike you, Laron, who always uses your brawn first.
Absolutely. He got you when you're a daddy.
With the Power Rangers, did you have, that you have obsessed fans with that show, but they were mostly young, weren't they?
Well, you would be surprised.
Okay.
The parents sometimes were almost more ridiculous than the kids. So,
wow.
I mean, a lot of parents always, even now, it's so funny, they come to conventions with their 20-something-year-old children, and they're like, just so you know, I loved you, and I used to sit at home. I wouldn't let people know, but I was really into the show, too. Mm-hmm. I would sit in the kitchen while they were watching it in the living room, and I would watch it. So it's just funny to hear all the stories. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, our demographic back in the day was in there, like, anywhere from 3 to, I don't know, up to 13 years old. But, there was a lot of kids in high school that watched it, too, secretly, I guess. And in college, I always hear stories of people, oh, yeah, we used to smoke pot and watch Power Rangers. So it's funny.
Yeah, that's what we used to do when we watched. No, I didn't say that at all. Okay, so you're going to be here this Saturday.
This coming weekend, I'll be there Saturday and Sunday at
right.
Dallas Comic and Pop Expo.
It's going to be at the Richardson Civic Center. Have you ever been to Dallas before?
I have. One of my good friends from college lives in Dallas, and I've been there many, many a time.
Ah, okay, good.
Well, we got to come out and go meet him.
We do.
Yeah, please come out.
And you have a 5-year-old, Laron.
Yes. I don't think she knows what the Power Rangers are yet.
Oh, okay.
Well, this will be a great introduction for her.
Yeah,
you have 5 days. You can pull it up on Netflix, if anything.
Okay.
Okay, David, our next guest, who's also going to be there, his name is Ryan Glitch. He's with Speed Dating for the event. He's on the line with us. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your guys' time and hope to see you next weekend.
Okay, we'll come out and see you.
All right, thank you.
And we have on the line with us Ryan Glitch. Ryan, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. Was that David Yost, the original Blue Ranger?
That was Yost, the original Blue Power Ranger.
Oh, I'm so jealous because he's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, you'll see him next week.
Yes, sir.
Tell us about your event, what you're doing.
Well, I own Sci-Fi Speed Dating, and we're a small company whose job is pretty simple. We just go to the different comic cons around the country, and we run speed dating to help like-minded fans find like-minded fans and hopefully, you know, find their true love. So far, we've got just had our 10th marriage. We have 19 engagements and over 100 couples dating seriously. I'm really excited to bring it to Dallas. It'll be our first time down there, and I've been looking forward to going to Dallas Comic and Pop Expo for the last couple months since I've been talking to the promoter about it. So I'm very excited.
Aside from gay speed dating, can you tell us a little bit about speed dating in general? What about it is like attractive as opposed to going on and date individually, you know, going out to dinner and actually spending some time with?
Well, so, you know, sometimes it's hard to meet somebody that you actually want to go on a real date with. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard to find the time to make it work, you know, for that first date. But with my speed dating, at least, you're stuck in a room with, you know, 50 other people who have a ton of things in common. You're all huge fans. You all have this huge passion, and you can use that to build from. And it's kind of a nice stepping stone to see where you can go. And that's why sci-fi speed dating, at least my speed dating, works better than regular speed dating.
So, are most of the clients that you see usually the ones who have trouble meeting other people on their own?
No, that's a really bad stereotype about the con world. I see people in there that look like, you know, supermodel quality. I see folks in there like myself with a few extra pounds. I mean, I see people from all walks of life, and, you know, of the 10 marriages, it's 10 guys who look like me, you know, your stereotypical big old nerd, and then they're all married to insanely beautiful women. So, you know, I don't think that body type or stereotypical nerdness has anything to do with it. I think that at least people in our world are way more receptive to what's inside.
Okay, now one of the components of this is going to be an LGBT speed dating event.
Yep.
Is it going to be mixed at the same time? Is it a separate event? How are you doing this?
No, we'll have a contemporary, you know, we'll have a regular speed dating session, and then we'll have the LGBT, and the lesbians will get to date the lesbians, the gay men will get to date the gay men.
That would be a good idea to keep those separate.
Yeah, the bis will intermate, like if you're bisexual, you get to date the ladies and then the guys, and back and forth, obviously. But we have it set up, it's easier to see in person, but it is ran separately just so that we can fit everybody in the room, because everybody deserves a chance to find somebody.
So, God, I wish you were around 17 years ago. Not that I'm not happy now. I'm not single, but it just would have been fun to try.
Danny, are you listening? If you are, you can call in.
It sounds like fun. But I've always wanted to know, how does it work? It's like, okay, you sit down, you talk to this person for a few minutes, and you go on. At the end of the night, how do you let the other person know that, hey, let's take this forward?
Everybody is issued a numbered badge before the session begins.
Okay.
They put that on their chest, and you get a pen and a 3x5 card, and you keep track of the people that you liked. If you like number 5, you write 5 down. Mm-hmm. And at the end, and it's kind of a secret for how I run my speed dating, so I'm not going to put it out there on the radio, but at the end, there's a way to anonymously give your contact info to the people that you liked while the people that liked you are giving you theirs.
Got it.
So even if nobody likes you, you wrote your number down for a couple other people, so they're probably going to call you. So there's that nice built-in second chance.
Oh, okay. So it's not just – there doesn't have to be the match. Like, if I marked you and you marked me, that would obviously be a match. But if I marked you but you didn't mark me, we still might get matched
up. You would still find out that he marked you.
Right. And then you could choose to call me or not call me.
Right.
In fact, our first 3 marriages were from people that weren't matched. They met at the session. They wrote each other's – you know, one of them wrote one name down, but the other one didn't. So the first 3 marriages weren't even matches, and they are the happiest couples I've ever seen.
Hmm. Oh, that's great. That's great.
Okay, so if somebody's really shy, like me, what? Whenever I say that, people always go, Okay, so let's say you're really shy and not good at starting a conversation. Now, I will say this, and everybody goes, oh, you...
And I know where you're going, but that's actually what I meant when I said, or do you find that most people who have trouble meeting people, some people are just shy.
Mm-hmm.
Although, even shy people, I tell everybody at the beginning of the session, if you have trouble coming up with something to say or something to ask, just ask people, what is your favorite movie? And you'll either fall in love or you'll hate them. But either way, you're going to get a great debate going. And that's again, why sci-fi speed dating works, just because there's something to build from. Because if I say my favorite movie is Superman, my girl's like, oh, I hate Superman. We can get into why and have a nice conversation.
Mm-hmm. But you're going to have a point of reference there, because being at a sci-fi event, people will know the movie.
Correct.
As opposed to, what's your favorite movie? Well, mine's Casablanca. Oh, mine's Superman. And we might not have ever seen each other's movies or have any point to discuss.
Correct. And that's, like I said, that's why sci-fi speed dating really works well, because, you know, everybody's in that world. You already have something in common.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Is it a good idea if somebody's going and really seriously overthinking it, is it a good idea to prepare something about yourself?
No, I don't advise that. I always tell people, just go with the cuff, because if you're off the cuff, just going, winging it, that's who you really are. That is who you are, mind, body, and spirit, right there on the cuff, ready to go. So I just tell people, just have fun with it. Don't overthink it. You know, at the end of the day, if nobody liked you, it just means it wasn't the session for you. I had a girl at one convention do 9 in a row and get no phone numbers, and then she did the 10th session, and she got the most numbers.
Wow.
You know, so there's no rhyme or reason to it. It just... The odds are in your favor. They aren't. Come back. Try again.
Mm-hmm.
How long are each session? 2-3 minutes?
Each session's just about an hour and a half, depending on the number of daters. Some of them go as long as 2 hours. None of them really go much shorter than an hour and a half.
But how long do you speak to each person before you switch?
Oh, each date is 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
And then how long in between, so that you can catch your breath and kind of...
Well, nope, you know, there's none in between. When the 3 minutes is up, get on to the next date, the timer starts again.
Okay, so it really is speed
dating.
Because that can be that can be kind of exhausting, because if you're really going into this saying, I want to impress the next one too, you know, and if you're kind of like me, I would do this really competitively.
Well, one of the things we do, because we know it's exhausting, I used to do stand-up comedy, and I mix that into the speed dating. So every few dates, I'll stop things, tell a couple jokes, tell some personal stories, give people a chance to relax and recuperate. So it's really kind of like speed dating in a show, and we just try to cater to everybody.
Oh, okay. And I guess that's what I meant. You almost need a minute or two to just catch your breath, so right. that going into the next one, you don't look exasperated.
I think this sounds like a great alternative to what has become the norm, which is bars or meeting, you know, hooking up with somebody online.
Right, and that's why I'm really into it, and that's why I have a lot of fun doing it, because we get to be there and see these relationships start in person, and, you know, it's really cool. And it's just been a lot of fun, and I'm really glad that Zach and Dallas and Comic Topic still brought us out. I'm really excited and very thankful for that.
Mm-hmm. And Joshua runs our board, is going to be there next week.
Yes.
He lives in Richardson, even. And
he's looking to hook up and get married.
Yes.
I'll do my best.
Okay.
Do something with the 7 kids.
Oh, well,
yeah, that's
whatever.
Right.
Yeah, saying he has to divorce and do something with the 7 kids, like right. One thing that I do like about this is, and where it's completely different from the bars. In the bars, you walk in, and like Rodney Dangerfield used to say, I went into a gay bar, and for every guy, there were 100 guys. One thing I do like about this is, so you go into a bar, and yeah, there are 100 guys, but I'm seeing somebody across the room. How do I go up to that person and start a conversation? And that's the hardest part. It's always difficult to start that conversation. And sometimes it clicks right away. Sometimes it doesn't. And when it doesn't, it always feels, ugh. And when it does, great. But that's the hard part. This, you're starting a conversation automatically.
Right. This is a built-in, easy way to succeed, and it's just fun, and there's no pressure.
And not only that, when you go to a bar, you might be there for a totally different purpose than that other guy that you think is hot is there. At least at the speed dating, you know why you're all there. Cuts that night right out. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, but they're there really for a date. I mean,
right.
And it's, you know, and in a bar, it can be a whole range of reasons that you're there. But it's that what's that first line that you say to somebody? Whereas if both people are there to talk to each other, you know you have to start talking.
So you can just say, what brings you to Dallas Comic and Pop Expo? Mm-hmm. And oh, I'm here to meet this actor. I'm here to meet the Blue Power Ranger, David Yost. I'm here to meet the Black Power Ranger, Walter Jones. You know, I'm here because I'm friends with the promoter. You know, there's always something to start from.
Right. How many cities have you done this in?
I stopped counting around 200 cons.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah, I've been doing this. I'm doing this for 4.5 years. I'm think I'm the most excited about Dallas Comic and Pop Expo because it's my first time in Dallas. I know there's going to be a lot of great celebrities at the show. I know that the dude in charge of it is a huge fan himself. It's not like he's trying to make a buck. He's trying to bring programming to the fans. Mm-hmm. So it's a show that we can really get behind. So I'm very excited.
Right. Good. Okay, so once again, if somebody wants to go, they can look up online Dallas Comic and Pop Expo. We don't know the times for any of the events yet. They're posting that tomorrow, they said. But if somebody wants to go, do they come and register? What do they do?
All they got to do is find the Sci-Fi speed dating table. I'll be sitting there with one of my assistants. We'll have a couple big banners up. They show up. They give me their name. We sign them up, and then we tell them which session that we're going to aim them for. Or if they want to pick one because they have a schedule, it's all they got to do is show up and give me their name.
Sounds pretty easy.
And you'll keep it straight, so to speak. Like if Josh goes, you will not send him to lesbian speed dating.
Right.
It may prove more fruitful for him, but if he wants to do straight speed dating, I'll let him do straight speed dating.
And we might suggest that for him. Right. But yeah, because we know his experience. Great. Ryan Glitch, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Ryan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. It's been great. Looking forward to seeing you next week.
Okay. We'll see you there next week.
See ya.
Okay. And that was interesting. I don't think we've ever done that on the air where we've had guest after guest after guest.
No, we haven't.
Related to one event. So that was fun to do.
That really does sound like fun, though, the speed dating.
Uh-huh.
Just, you know, regardless if you get a date out of it or not. Mm-hmm. Just sounds like it would be fun.
Yeah.
No,
I don't think his husband would particularly care for that.
I don't think I would like it right now, but just years ago it would have been fun.
But I think it's one of those things that's good experience in just talking to people that you don't know before. And next time you go out, you have this experience where, I know how to just start talking to somebody. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about for somebody who really isn't good at just talking
right.
to strangers.
Right.
I mean, my problem is I'll talk to anybody.
So. Of course. Now, Tyler, are you partnered up?
Yeah, but not. I mean, we've been together for 4 months, so I'll do speed dating if I get to have a speed date with the Blue Ranger. And if he wears his outfit.
Oh, so we see you have a fetish.
Well, I mean, I'm just a big fan of the Blue Ranger. I always was. The Blue and the Pink Ranger. I wanted to be the Pink Ranger, and then I wanted to date the Blue Ranger.
Gotcha. Well, you know what? We'll try and hook that up for you.
Okay, good.
See you next week.
We'll see what we can do. We have a lot of influence
okay,
here.
Okay, so Josh and Tyler are going, and we wish the best for both of you.
I think David's going, too.
Are you partnered or hooked up with anybody, David?
I don't know. This Power Ranger thing seems very appealing.
We wish all three of you luck.
I think we'll take our break early, and then we're going to come back. Tyler Curry's here. He's going to talk a little bit about his needle prick project. We can talk a little bit of news as well. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis. We'll be back right after this.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now is the time to make your pledge count. Be sure to send it in to KNON 5353 Maple Avenue, Dallas, Texas 75235. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by donating online at KNON.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. KNON 5353 Maple Avenue, Dallas, Texas 75235. Be sure to include the name of the show you're supporting. For questions about the pledge drive, 214-828-9500. Extension 234.
This is a random person, and I don't listen to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM Dallas.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis. The late Patty Fink is running late. She called me at about 10:30 this morning, and I said, "Hi, you're running late." She just laughed because it was 3 hours early. Another guest in the studio today, Tyler Curry's here. He started the Needle Prick Project, what is it, about a year ago?
A little over a year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
In November of 2012.
Okay, tell us what the Needle Prick Project is.
The Needle Prick Project, it's actually just called the Needle Prick now. It's a multimedia HIV awareness campaign. So it started out with an article that I wrote just about my own coming out HIV positive. And then it turned into a profile series of other people and their experiences with HIV. And then it kind of morphed into a photo series or a photo campaign where people kind of made a pledge to be more aware, to have more discussions about HIV, to get tested, of course. And now it's kind of into its third leg of its life, which it's going to be a docuseries with Huffington Post. So it's always changing.
Well, but it needs to always change, doesn't it, to keep the interest in something? Just like a lot of these photo projects, okay, here's another time we're doing whatever
right,
pictures.
Right, exactly.
Nothing against them. Great idea.
Well, I did it too, so I guess.
No, and seriously, but it's one of those, unless there's something new and interesting, are people going to always be watching it or paying attention to it?
Well, and for me, it's also to keep my interest because I get bored doing the same thing over and over, and that's, you know, kind of why I'm in the career that I am. And it's fun for me because, you know, the docuseries is going to be a collection of like 5-minute viral videos, and each video is a different topic, whether it's dating and stigma or defining what stigma is to you or experience like horror stories of things you've heard about HIV. But it really takes it to the next level because, you know, reading only captures certain audiences because, let's be honest, not everybody reads, you know, at least maybe they don't even read the whole article. So it's really a way to get more people engaged, and it's more of a dialogue versus just me kind of writing about what people tell me. It's letting other people put their voice to it.
How are you finding the clips? Are you seek people submitting them, or are you just looking for them and you find one? Oh, I like that.
No, I'm filming it. So we just filmed it in Houston. So we brought in 15 interviewees and of all different backgrounds, and I really don't ask them about their HIV status because it's kind of irrelevant. Everybody is a part of the conversation, and you know, everyone says this is not a gay disease, and it's not, but it's definitely a big gay issue. And I do section it out because, you know, there's a message for gay men, there's a message for straight men. That message is different. So, you know, I like to kind of not categorize, but you know what I mean. But, you know, I bring everyone in for about 30 minutes each and just kind of ask them a series of questions. And then those questions kind of break up into different videos that will be shared.
AIDS education now is completely different than it was when the epidemic started. Basically, when I was first doing AIDS education in conjunction with the Resource Center, what we were teaching people was you need to protect yourself because this is a death sentence. Fortunately, that's changed. Okay, when you were in school, what were you learning about HIV?
The same. I mean, I remember something very clear. I had to take home a waiver and have my parents sign it because even discussing HIV was so controversial. And, of course, whenever I was in the fourth grade, we didn't talk about the gay culture in school, but there's always a fear behind it because it was thought of as a gay disease, and it was the plague, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to catch people up because so much has changed with research and treatment and education, but people are still really far behind on their knowledge. And I mean, how do you catch up from a plague to something that's chronic in 30 years? That's, you know, that's a very short period of time. And so all of those images of fear are still emblazoned in people's mind, mm-hmm. as they should be, because a lot of people lost a lot of friends and loved ones. So,
have you, in the course of your interview so far, have you been surprised at some of the things you've heard?
I'm always surprised. You know, it's my job to not really register any any feeling, whether I agree with you or disagree with you, because I want these interviews as authentic as possible.
See, that's one difference between us. It's my job to be judgmental with everybody.
I judge them afterwards.
Oh, no, okay. Which is, I mean, you don't have to have an opinion about it either way, but what are some of the things that you that kind of surprise you? Like, oh, I never thought of that.
I don't want to give too much away. But there is, you know, it's always surprising when people come in and, you know, they're, like I said, these various levels of understanding. And a lot of it, it scares me because since I've been, I came out as positive in November of 2012. Since then, you know, it's kind of like preaching the gospel, trying to get people to pay attention to some of the mistakes that they might be making that they don't really even consider mistakes. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of friends tell me that they're positive or just recently diagnosed positive, and it's even though, you know, I was an example in their life of the same exact, you know, way, I don't really talk about why, how I got HIV, because I feel like people want to place a level of, well, you deserved it this much or you deserved it that much. You know, I was dating someone and we didn't use a condom, and that's what happened, and people are either call me a liar or a whore, or you know, so you know, it's always interesting, the character assumptions, like, well, I can't get HIV because I'm a good person basically, or I don't sleep around, but it only takes one time.
Like, well, one of the things that I thought of, because I've heard something, a report just the other day about some HIV statistics, and I'm, even though I consider myself to be well-informed when it comes to this, I'm not maybe the absolute best informed, but I'm still a little surprised when I hear that teenagers, like 13 and 14, come up HIV positive. And I'm like, what? That just always still surprises me. I guess because in my mind I'm thinking, okay, well, they probably don't really start having sex about 16 or 17, but oh well.
Sly, so, you're so the like, most careless at that age. I think that that's like the danger zone. Like,
and you're right.
I did dumb things whenever I was 13 to 18, really dumb things. I got smarter in my 20s, right. And that's whenever I was surprised that, like, I'm always surprised when someone in their 20s and 30s gets it, because just you like really I was, help. Like, we knew better. A 13-year-old doesn't know any better.
No.
You know, they're fumbling around just like we all did at that age with sex.
I know when I was 12 or 13, I was just scared out of my mind about HIV because of what you saw on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So it did.
Well, and the way it was talked about, mm-hmm. also. I mean, there, mm-hmm. There was something to be afraid of because there was no medication. If something happens once.
Right.
You can contract it. You know, not that you're not normally careful or anything, but you could contract it. I don't know where I was going with that. Math's on automatic this morning. Okay, now with the Needle Prick Project, are there some things that even you've seen change? Like, I know it's not talked about the same way now as when you were in school or when I was talking about it. I remember, you know, you mentioned the permission slips that you had to
right.
get. And I remember one time I was speaking at a school, and the principal told me, she said, because I asked if there were any kids that were not going to sit in class, and she said, just one. She said, on my answering machine, I had this message that said, do you know what those people are going to be teaching my kid or our kids? And so she called him back and she said, yes, we do, and hung up.
You know, I was going to say, it was funny about you having to have permission slips. Was this what you were in high school?
No, I was in elementary school.
Oh, okay, okay. Because yeah. mm-hmm. we just found out we went to the same high school.
Oh, yeah, we did.
And
the Blue Raiders.
Yes. And we talked about HIV when I was in high school, but we didn't get permission slips.
Oh, that's interesting.
No, that probably has changed since then.
But that was high school.
That was high school.
At the time.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is different then about the way HIV is discussed now than when you were in school? I mean, obviously because it's a treatable disease now.
Well, terrible, yeah, it's an emerging change. You know, I think people are really discussing being open and disclosure. More, it's more about honesty and integrity now because nobody – one of the things that I really try to push is this idea that – A man who discloses his HIV positive status is actually it's a sign of good character, because, you know, and I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about a lot of columns I write get into the minutiae of, like, dating and when to disclose and how dare you not disclose to me right away, and it's my right to choose who I date or not date. That scares me, because if someone's disclosing to you, then you're in the safety zone. And people really need to understand that the people who aren't disclosing are the ones who are dangerous. And, you know, I can say that, and you're like, oh, yeah, I get that. But medically, they're the most dangerous because they don't know. And to get into a little bit, like, their viral load, if you don't know, your viral load's higher. If you know and you're on medication, if you are undetectable, it's highly unlikely, I would say virtually impossible, to transmit the disease. I get in a lot of trouble for saying that, because they're a lot of people who have grown up with education is used to using fear as a tactic to scare away people into the behaviors that keep you safe. That's
one thing that we know, though, is that, you know, despite the degree that we're talking about, the transmission rate is much lower from somebody with a zero viral load count than with somebody who doesn't know and is HIV positive, because their viral load count will be so much higher. Right.
The transmission rate is actually zero. There is not one documented case of anyone undetectable transmitting the disease. Here's the caveat to that. If I tell you, if we're talking about a long-term relationship, you know I'm undetectable. You see me take my pill every morning. You see the numbers that I get back from my doctor every 4 months. If it's a hookup situation, if you don't know me or we're just dating, me saying I'm HIV negative is the same thing as me saying I'm undetectable. You don't know. I could have missed an entire week last week of pills, and I might not be.
And I guess here's where the variance would come in. Somebody whose viral load is right around zero, mm-hmm. It can spike for some reason during that time. It's not likely. It can. That's the reason, and I'm not using fear here, but that would be the time when it could possibly transmit from one person to another, I suppose.
Right. There's a possibility. You know, the problem with staying undetectable is compliance. Not everybody remembers to take their medication. Now, missing a pill once a month is not what we're talking about. We're talking about, like,
once a week or more.
Or once a week, or missing a week of pills, or going off of them and then on them, because there's a lot of fear of ownership of HIV. So a lot of men will go, like, let's say they start dating someone and they want to hide it so much that they stop taking pills, because they would rather, you know, stop medication and put their bodies at risk for the fear of someone judging them for finding their pill box. And, mm-hmm. you know, so there's a lot of junk that is on top of getting people compliant. Only 25% of people who are HIV positive are compliant. 25%. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's 25% of people who are positive don't know it. So there's this huge gap. 50% of people who are positive know they are, understand why they need to be on treatment, but for some reason they aren't, or they don't stay on it, or they fall off. And there's a lot of psychological factors that go into that.
Now, I know that this is going to be the needle prick. It's going to be interviews you've done with people and let them share their stories. Mm-hmm. But do you talk or narrate as part of this the importance of condom use?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think the importance of condom use is implied. I talk about the importance of condom use. I also get in a lot of trouble because I also talk about the glaring ratio of people who don't use condoms. So, yes, it's important. I talk a lot about PrEP, mm-hmm. which, for those who don't know, PrEP is pre-exposure prophylaxis, and it's basically a pill. It's the same pill a person who's positive takes for their treatment, but taking it regularly, after 7 days even, reduces your chance of contracting HIV by 96%. Between, like, there's different numbers, but usually it's between, like, 92 and 99%.
So for those who don't know, PrEP is, what he's talking about is for someone who's negative.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, my my message is not condoms. My message is you need to be the most educated as possible to understand how this virus is not that smart. There's one way, and it's not tricky. It's not trying to trick you. You can understand it and navigate your life and your dating life just fine. Whether you know, it doesn't matter who you're dating, if they're positive or negative, as long as you have the information.
Mm-hmm. Good. Do you have an upcoming project? You're working on these videos. I know you've done a number of events and bars and other things.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That,
on the first Friday of this month, the Needle Prick is partnering with the Red Party Foundation, which is now the Dallas Red Foundation. And we are doing a happy hour at Alexander's from 8 to 10 the first Friday, so it's March 7th. All proceeds during that time go to both organizations. If you don't know about the Red Party, it benefits Legacy House. So, yeah, come by, 8 to 10. We're going to have entertainment. All you have to do to support this cause is buy a drink. So that's pretty like the easiest way to fundraise ever, right?
Lauren's good at that.
Very, very. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing this when it's finished.
It should be the first docu video should be out on Huffington Post and I think a couple other websites in about 2 weeks. So,
you can expect to see
a new video about every 2 weeks, and please share them on your Facebook. That's the whole point of this, is to kind of spread the word.
Nice.
Thank you for being here, and in the interest of this being the speed show,
yes.
I have – do you realize we have a new – I can't really say marriage equality state, but we do have a new marriage equality county.
Yes, we do. Cook County. Yes.
That was a surprise.
It was a surprise, and what he's talking about is the state of Illinois passed same-sex marriage last year, but, of course, they put, like, what, 6 months?
They didn't put a hold on it. It's an old state constitution that if a law is passed by a majority, laws passed in one session go into effect the following June 1st. With a supermajority, it can go into effect maybe March 1st, but they didn't have that supermajority. Illinois was debating that law for a year.
Yeah. And the judge said... he didn't see any reason to make these couples continue to wait because there's been no legal opposition filed against it.
And part of the thing in Illinois, several people filed lawsuits saying, I have a partner who is terminal. Mm-hmm. We'd like to get married. The district clerk in Cook County said, I don't have a problem with this. In fact, filed a friend of the court brief. And so the judge just ruled, no reason to wait. But it was a district court, only has jurisdiction in that county. Right. I have a feeling one county after another is going to fall, and then, but by June 1st, they have same-sex marriage anyway.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Just kind of an odd thing about mm-hmm. about their law. In Texas, we're still waiting for a ruling on the divorce case. We're waiting for something on
the challenge to the ban.
I saw one other lawsuit filed this week. I know there's been a new lawsuit by a couple in Fort Worth against the Texas ban, and a couple of other lawsuits in more states. There are challenges to 27 of the 33 bans right now, something like that.
Wow.
Around the
wow.
Well, you know, all it's taking really is one couple in a state to say, okay, if Utah and Oklahoma and Virginia and who are the other two states that have – oh, and Ohio.
Kentucky.
And Kentucky. If judges in those states can be ruling in our favor, mm-hmm. And such happened to me. Something happened. We have a kid, and we want the kid – both of our – names, both parents on the birth certificate. We have a whatever that happened, and that was discriminatory. It just takes one person, one couple, to file something and say, this isn't working.
Well, you know where I predict to be the next marriage equality state.
Well, mine was Mississippi, which I changed to Alabama.
No. Mine is going to be Arizona.
Oh.
Not.
Oh. No, that's, and in fact, there was just a new lawsuit filed in Arizona this week. Arizona may become one of the next ones because of this discriminatory law.
Yeah, if you haven't heard, Arizona just passed a law. Now, there's discussion about them doing this in Kansas, but it only got out of the House there, not the Senate. Well, a new law has been passed in both the House and Senate in Arizona that says you can legally discriminate against somebody for things like if they come into your store and you're allowed to not serve them. This is legal discrimination. I can't believe this is happening in 2014. I keep asking, are we sure this isn't 1914? So I don't. The governor hasn't signed it.
What I like about that, yeah, no, she hasn't signed it yet. She's been told by the business community not to. They've already lost 1,000 jobs in that state.
They have.
It was a company that was planning on expanding, moving to Arizona, and they have pulled out their bid. They said, we can't subject our employees to this kind of business climate.
Right.
That's not going to happen. That brings us to the end of another show. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you for coming, Tyler.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Guys.
Glad you were here. David, thanks for coming by. We'll be back next week. Have you contacted Leslie about being on the show?
Yeah, she should be on next week.
And Leslie Newman, who's the author of Heather Has Two Mommies and lots of other stuff, October morning. She's going to be here in town, but she'll be speaking to us before she gets here.
Yes.
See you then.